Chapter 15. On Holiday. It was easily the strangest place Brannis had ever awakened, to the point where even pondering the second strangest seemed pointless. No larder, no hayfield, no dank wilderness cave could compare to being tossed an unfathomable distance through the ether, to awaken at your own writing desk and find it perched on a lonely bit of black marble floor, surrounded by a sandy beach, and watched by an awe-struck assemblage of people from another world. Brannis glanced around warily, working his mouth to rid it of the gummy feeling after just awakening and rubbing his eyes. Wonderful. I hope you know how to run a war, Kyrus, because you just bought yourself one with that little stunt. Brannis took quick stock of what had been brought along to Dinku Appa by the transference spell. The black marble with greenish veins was clearly from the palace wall and floor, carved out in a spherical chunk. The desk and chair he had fallen asleep at were wholly intact. There was an undisturbed inkpot and several sheets of parchment, and a small number of books of magic. He had fallen asleep with his armor on, something he had done the two nights running since the assassination attempt at the wedding. The gauntlets that went along with Liad's armor hung from a hook at his waist, and the helm was underfoot where he had left it. No bit was missing. Avalanche was sheathed at his hip, the tip resting on the floor. In short, he was prepared for being ambushed in the night by a Magrin assailant. I'm not sure what countermeasures I could have prepared against my idiot twin dumping me on a tiny island in the middle of the Katamic Sea on Tellurak. Despite his spiteful inner monologue, Brannis had begun to consider that Kyrus was the smarter of the two of them, spending more of his time in books while Brannis spent more time with a sword in hand or a horse beneath his rump. As the curious Dinku approached, he could barely understand a word of what they said. Babbling noise. You? Indistinguishable yammering. Kyrus? Say... something, something. Name. A score of Dinku spat questions at him along similar lines. He knew he probably knew most of the words, but his own ears were untrained and were not picking them apart from amid the stream of foreign sounds he was hearing. Talk slow, please, Brannis requested, standing up from his chair. If things went badly, and he could envision several ways in which it could, then he did not want to be at a disadvantage by being seated. One of the elders held his arms out to his sides and gestured for the rest to quiet down. Brannis recognized him as Toktu. In fact, Brannis could put names to most of the Dinku present. It was a strange sensation, the feeling of familiarity with sights his eyes had never seen, with scents his lungs had never breathed in. Brannis had been wakened as soon as the transference spell had been completed, so he had no idea how Kyrus was getting on in Vaedris, or if he was having the same experience there. Who are you? Toktu obligingly spoke very slowly for Brannis' benefit. Where is Spirit Man Kyrus? The latter question had a hint of worried desperation to it. The Dinku elder suspected something had gone wrong. I am Brannis, Brannis explained. I am Kyrus's spirit brother. Brannis struggled for words in a language he barely knew to explain a concept he did not fully understand himself. There were muttered conversations among the gathered Dinku, but Toktu remained respectfully attentive as Brannis fought to make his explanation. Kyrus, go! Brannis winced, knowing that was not the right verb tense. To spirit world. Brannis gestured, pointing vaguely to the sky and out to sea. He go out. Blast it. What is the past tense of go in Dinku? Other place. My home. Brannis poked himself in the chest. Kyrus took part. Brannis gestured to the bit of Imperial Palace stonework that was brought along with him, outlining it with his hands. And sent it here. So, where is Kairos? Toktu asked, clearly not quite sure what his strange visitor was trying to convey. There was general unease among the villagers. They had expected a goodbye, but the horrific vortex at Kairos's parting, followed by the arrival of Brannis, was something entirely different. They were not sure what. Home. My home. Brannis pointed to himself. Do you speak Spirit Man Kairos's language? Gahalu called out in Akkardian, hoping to bridge the cultural gap so that his people could find out what went wrong with Kairos's parting. Yes, Brannis managed in Akkardian of his own, the first time he had used the language. It was familiar as an old song he had heard since childhood, but he had never sung it before. With Gahalu's help, Brannis and Toktu were able to discuss the details of Kairos's spell and how it went wrong. The Denku were distraught that Kairos was not home in Akkardia as he had hoped, feeling that his departure from Denku Appa was all for naught. The little stone hut was homey enough, and he recognized it, but Brannis hoped it would not be his for long. Brannis carefully piled the books he carried in a corner. None but he would be able to read them, but nevertheless he did not want the Denku taking custody of them. The four tomes were all instruction on magic and belonged in the libraries of the Tower of Contemplation in faraway Kadrin. It was hard to fathom that he was not currently on Vaedris, a fact that would have seemed impossible were it not his current state. Magic made all things possible, they said, but certain life constants seemed less mutable than others. He took his helm off and set it down atop the pile of books. He had no need of it, and had only worn it because it was easier than finding a free hand to carry it. Brannis might have pressed one of the Denku into service helping him, but he supposed they were a bit afraid of him, and the otherworldly objects he brought with him. Brannis slumped down onto the sleeping mat, elbows on knees, with a rattle of armor. What am I going to do here? I belong here as much as Kairos does in Kadrus, which is to say, not at all. I still have a war to fight back home. Kairos had better sort this out quickly. Brannis stood up again, unable to sit calmly and uncomfortable sitting on the ground in his armor, magically fitted though it was. He paced the small dwelling, aware of the murmurings outside that indicated the Denku were watching for him to emerge. I could live here among them, as Kairos did. Once he figures out how he did whatever it was he did, he can undo it and get me back on Vaedris where I belong. In the meantime, what? Fresh sea breezes and the company of those two lasses he was too shy to enjoy? I may be forced to, if Kairos takes over long, and I cannot find a way to a civilized part of Tellurak. Brannis began stripping off his armor as he formulated a plan. The island was hot enough that none of the natives wore more than the barest of clothing, and he had the distinct feeling that they were wary of the demonic-looking gold and quicksilver plate he was wearing when they first saw him. He needed to get on the next ship to visit the island, whenever it might arrive. He had to be ready at any time. Not only would wearing the elaborate armor scare the Denku, it might make the ship's crew think he carried a lot more coin than he actually had. Brannis had a small coin purse with a dozen or so Kadrin lions. There was no exchange rate between those and any Telluraki. Tellurakan? Tellurakish? Brannis had no idea how to properly name something belonging to Kairos world. Currency. They were pure gold, and large enough to be worth a tidy sum, but hardly the sort of wealth a man with the armor he wore would have. Clad in nothing but the loose garment he wore beneath his leg armor, Brannis buckled his sword belt back on. Avalanche was not going to leave his side at any time if he could help it. It was not that the Denku were a threatening lot, but a select few of them had personal property issues, and very little sense or responsibility. Avalanche was dangerous enough that he could not risk anyone toying with it out of curiosity. The rest of his gear he piled in the corner with his other belongings. He would need something to pack it all in, but for now, He had one other task that was more pressing. When Brannis emerged from the hut, a throng had gathered. If dozens had gone to see Kyrus off, hundreds awaited Brannis' exit. Nearly the entire village. Brannis waved amiably and headed back to the beach where he had arrived. The crowd parted for him, but followed his progress. There is no way I will get privacy to do this. I will at least impress them, if not frighten them. But if a ship comes, I will not be able to explain it away. The crowd held back as Brannis approached the odd structure that errant magic and happenstance had conspired to construct on their beach. It was a semicircular wall, standing there like some sculptor's impression of a sunset, rendered in black marble. It bisected a circular section of matching floor, with the side containing Brannis's desk and chair being the largest by far, and Brannis's chair was its center point. Brannis hauled the heavy desk off the marble and onto the sand several paces back toward the jungle and his hut, careful not to set a leg down on his bare feet. He did likewise with the chair, though it was far easier to move. He would enjoy the exotic furnishings while he was on Dinku Appa, and their presence would not be any more odd than the incongruous little stone hut was in the first place. The black marble abomination, however, was another matter. Brannis drew Avalanche from its sheath slowly, turning to the Dinku and calling to Gahalu, "Let them know to keep back. I just cannot leave this strange wall here." Brannis took a gentle swing and passed the blade through the wall. There was a crushing of stone as the wall rocked a bit and gave way before the inexorable sword as it struck. The Dinku were shocked, Gahalu included, but remained well back and safe from the destruction as Brannis continued, chopping up the wall. Brannis worked carefully, never swinging the sword more vigorously than he would a full tankard of ale. As the Dinku villagers watched in fascination, Brannis leveled the wall and began breaking up the floor as well. There was empty space below, except for where the wall had continued on down to the floor below, back when it was part of the Kadrin Imperial Palace. Kyrus had taken far more sand from Dinku Appa when he had left. Then he had sent marble to replace it. Brannis was glad of that. In fact, he had counted on it. Once he had a pit filled with large rubble, he jabbed the blade down repeatedly to break it up further. With no other real pressing business to draw away his attention, Brannis spent hours turning the wall into gravel, and then knocked loose sand from around the edges of the hole to cover it. What was left looked like a puckered scar in the beachhead. In time, wind and tide would erase all evidence of Brannis's handiwork, but even before then, no one would ever have thought that there had once been a wall from another world standing there. Brannis awoke in the late afternoon after a long nap. He had been relieved to see that Kyrus had suffered no major disasters yet in Kadrus, and that Roshan was working to keep the swapping of Brannis's a secret. "I suspect that demon rat knew more than he let on, ever since I set off for Rainsdark and dropped that tidbit about cannons. He did not ask what one was, or show any reaction at all. He left me to wonder whether he understood what a cannon was, or whether he was just willing to let the odd term pass unchallenged out of expedience. But now I know which it was." One annoyance from his quick trip to watch Kyrus back in Kadrus was that Roshan had forbade attempting the spell again until they understood how it had happened. He had gone so far as to indicate he would help Kyrus to learn how to control his source. The prospect of Kyrus learning proper magic without Brannis having to read him bedtime stories out of the Tower of Contemplation's libraries was a welcome relief. Brannis had enough to work on between reading reports, devising strategies for the war with Magrin, sketching designs for airships, and learning how to rune-forge weapons in the style of the Stone Folk. When he thought about it, it was amazing he had time to spare for breathing amidst all that. "I suppose I will learn whether I spread myself too thinly when the reports all come back, with losses on the battlefields. Airships begin falling from the skies, and that rune-forged sword snaps in Iridan's hand when first he wields it in a real battle. It would be just his luck. Brannis was somewhat surprised to find that he had slept undisturbed. At the least, he had expected to find Kairos's two little imps curled up nearby. Brannis poked his head outside the hut and saw that Gahalu was sitting with his back against the wall, keeping the others away. "You are awake. Good. You have a small problem," Gahalu told him, climbing to his feet and brushing sand and dirt from his legs. "You mean in addition to being stranded here because Spirit Man Kairos cannot aim his magic?" Brannis hoped he did not offend Gahalu by slighting the Dinku's Spirit Man, but he felt he had a rather special privilege in that regard, being his twin. Any new problem is going to have to get in line behind that one. Gahalu chuckled. "As I said, a small problem. Gektu wants to challenge you. You are an outsider, uninvited, and showed great strength when you broke that rock thing that came with you." Gektu. Brannis searched his memories to place a face with that name, which sounded familiar. Ah, the hunter with the necklace of panther teeth, he recalled. "It did not belong in this world. If a ship comes, I want them to find nothing but a lost traveler looking for passage to the mainland. I want no mysteries to make them wary of me. So why does Gektu want to challenge me? If everyone saw what I can do with that sword, why would he want to fight me?" Brannis wondered. "To prove he is the best hunter. A panther's claws will cut a man's neck with one swipe. A boar's tusk will open his gut. A hunter lives by avoiding the weapons of his prey. The more dangerous the prey, the more the hunter proves himself. Gektu is one among many who are saying you are a spirit who escaped the spirit world when Kairos left. To kill a spirit would have his name told in stories long after he is dead," Gahalu explained, putting a hand on Brannis' shoulder. "The Dinku revere the spirits," Brannis protested. "Why would he be honored for killing one? And besides, I am no spirit, I am a man, like you or like Kairos. I am just a man far from home." "I believe you are a man, and no spirit. And yes, we revere the good spirits. They are not saying you are a good spirit." Brannis stood across an empty expanse of the village center, perhaps a dozen paces, and stared down his opponent. He had considered donning his armor and allowing the Dinku hunter free rein to jab ineffectually at him with a spear, but thought better of it. If he were to do that, he would never be able to take off that armor while he was on the island, lest they wait to catch him without it for a rematch. Avalanche was still sheathed at his side. Brannis did not want to kill Gektu if he could help it. "You want kill me," Brannis called out, feeling a tad more comfortable with Kairos's knowledge of Dinku than when he had arrived, sleepy and disoriented. "I say you are a killer of men, not hunter." "Words not save you, spirit," Gektu shouted back, loud enough to ensure everyone gathered to watch heard him. "You kill strangers. I do not kill hunters." Brannis sat down in the ground. "Spirit Man Kairos is my brother. I do not kill his friends." "Coward?" "Friend," Brannis corrected. "I have no spirits for friends. If you do not fight, I will just kill you." Gektu advanced threateningly at Brannis, who could not be certain whether the Dinku hunter was bluffing. "Fine, then." Brannis scrambled to his feet and drew Avalanche swiftly from its sheath. "Your slow blade is no match for my spear," Gektu boasted before all. "Oh," Brannis realized. "He saw me swinging it slowly so I did not send shards of rock everywhere." Brannis grinned, holding his sword out lazily in guard position, letting it drift back and forth at approximately the speed he had used to break the marble wall. Gektu was cautious. Hunters lived longer lives when they made sure of their prey's limits before striking. The Dinku hunter made short jabs with his spear, testing Brannis's reflexes. It was all Brannis could do to avoid letting his instincts take over and take a real swing in his defense.
Not yet, Brannis thought. Not yet.
When Brannis judged that Gaktu had made just the right sort of strike, a straight thrust that reached just inside Avalanche's reach, he sprang into action. The sluggish, drifting sword became a blur of motion,
faster than Gaktu could react.
The first swipe chopped off the tip of the spear. The second halved its length. As Gaktu stumbled backward in surprise, Brannis deftly cut between his wide-spaced grip and left his opponent with two short, splintered sticks in his hand, each the size of a tent stake. Brannis punched out with the crossguard of the sword, pulling the blow just as it connected with Gaktu's chest. It was still enough to take the hunter from his feet and deposit him jarringly on his back. I win, Brannis stated. He sheathed Avalanche, making it clear that he had no intention of fighting to the death. Then he offered a hand to help Gaktu rise, but the hunter's pride and ribs were too badly hurt to accept. That was something Brannis could understand, until he saw the look Gaktu gave him. It was filled with fear and hatred, and was more than Brannis could ignore. Reaching down as Gaktu cowered and tried to defend himself, Brannis grabbed the necklace Gaktu wore and snapped the leather thong. Letting it hang by one end,
the panther teeth slid off
and fell to the dirt all around the defeated hunter. You are not ready to be first hunter when Fanu becomes elder, Brannis told Gaktu, loudly enough for everyone to hear. Fanu can tell what is prey and what is friend.
That should have been who, but I think they understood me.
Brannis dined by his hut that night, on a bowl of fish and mango stew that Kahalu brought to him. It was tasty, with a sweet saltiness so prevalent in Denku cooking, but a far ride from the feasting that had accompanied Spirit Man Kairos's arrival. You made enemies today, Kahalu told him, sitting by Brannis's side as the itinerant knight ate his supper. Gaktu is no more an enemy now than when he first tried to kill me, Brannis reasoned, talking around a mouthful of stew. If Brannis had any thought of the rudeness of speaking with a full mouth, it was mitigated by the fact that he was hungry, and a new spoonful of stew replaced each that was swallowed with little break in between. You broke his necklace. You shamed him, Kahalu explained. You had beaten him. You could have left it at that. You should have seen the look in his eyes when I offered him help standing. It made me angry. He made a fool's mistake, and I made one in turn. Brannis sighed. I could have killed him if that was my way, and I thought giving him life ought to have earned me his thanks. Would I have made fewer enemies if I had killed him instead? Brannis asked, genuinely curious as to the Denku custom on ending challenges. Perhaps. You certainly would have made one fewer, Kahalu joked, trying to ease the mood. But I think perhaps to simply have walked away may have been best. He could not challenge you again without looking foolish, and if he attacked you by surprise, he would mark himself as a coward. Well, I've made enemies before. Hopefully I can mend that garment over time. I like to have a clean conscience. I sleep well. I think any man who lives his life right should. And I would not want to lose that, Brannis said, staring vaguely off into the jungle rather than at his companion. Well enough, Kahalu said, rising to his feet. One other thing. The fishermen pulled ashore with word of a ship on the horizon. Brannis perked up. A ship? Is it headed this way?
Oh, Kairos, your timing could not have been worse. Another day or two and you might have gotten off this island and back to Acardia instead of Kadrin.
It fights the wind, but yes. The night will be too treacherous to land without help. I doubt they will even get close enough tonight to try. Get sleep and take your leave of us in the morning, if they will have you. I think it would be best if they will take you. Spirit man Kairos never caused this trouble you brought, the Halu said, seeming colder toward Brannis than he had ever seemed toward Kairos.
Well, do not let them leave without me, Brannis joked, informing Gahalu that he knew how Kairos had come to be stranded on Dinku Appa in the first place.
Have no worry. Toktu will be just as happy with you gone. He liked Spirit Man Kairos, but I do not think he would go to any effort to keep you here, spirit or not.
Brannis had thought to get one night of peaceful sleep all to himself before departing on the morrow, but the thought was not destined to last. Giggling outside his hut broke him free of that drifting place where the mind waits idly for slumber to overtake it. His thoughts instantly went to Tipu and Kali, Kairos's seductive little admirers. He almost had to grudgingly admire their persistence, but he quickly realized there were more than just two awaiting him outside. Brannis took their bait and rose to see what was transpiring without. There were a dozen or so girls, clad in, well, by any Kadrin standard of decency, essentially they were not clad, except in the most nitpicking sense. They wore loincloths, beads, and bracelets, but Brannis saw it as a tawdry brothel turned inside out to deposit their wares in the sparse jungle. The Dinku all dressed vaguely such, from old crones to fishermen, but intent made all the difference to Brannis's way of thinking. The thoughts of the giggling throng were plainly written in eager eyes and coy smiles. Interestingly enough, Brannis saw no sign of either of Kairos's nemeses among the group. Quite possibly, they were the only unwed girls from the village not present. The nervous, conspiratorial whispers ceased when they saw Brannis emerge from the hut,
becoming a cacophony of shrill, incomprehensible Dinku language
that Brannis only guessed at the meaning of by context. Brannis held up a hand in front of him and was grateful that the gesture to stop was universal enough for Dinku to have adopted it. The girls' propositions, questions, and promises slowed to a halt as they waited for Brannis to say something in response. "Wait here," Brannis told them. They looked confused, but none wanted to give offense and upset him. There was a competition of sorts afoot, and Brannis meant to settle it cleanly. He took a rock with something resembling a point and drew a long line in the dirt in front of the girls. By gestures, he got the point across that they were to line up along it. "I pick one girl. I pick, not you. Understand?" Brannis asked. Heads nodded obediently and enthusiastically. One girl started babbling a question, but Brannis cut her off with an imperious gesture. "Not you," he pointed back to the village. "Go." The rest of the girls kept quiet as thieves as Brannis made his way up and down the line, making a show of looking them over. "I will pick one girl tonight. Any girl I do not pick, no argue. Understand?" Again, there was nodding. As Brannis inspected them, one by one he sent them back to the village, never giving a particular reason, but leaving the impression that they had failed some test, were lacking a certain something he craved. Most bore the rejection with resignation. A few cried softly, their own doing by Brannis's logic. At last he left himself with the shyest, least annoying of the girls, possibly the youngest, though he would have been hard-pressed to divine her age. She stood rigidly at attention, not lifting her gaze to meet Brannis's. Brannis lifted her chin and looked her in the eyes when he spoke to her. "At home, I have a girl I love. I choose her. Tonight, if you be quiet, you can sleep in the hut. Tomorrow I leave on a boat. You can tell other girls anything. Make a good story." Brannis smiled gently. He had no further trouble falling asleep that night, and made a young Dinku girl the envy of her friends.